Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Day two is here, Kansas City. Welcome on into Dana and Parks. Scott Parks will be back next week. I am thrilled that Drew Nixon from Next Door, Cody and Gold's producer, is sitting in with me. Hello, Drew, first
hello.
Of all, from 96.5 The
Happy
Fan.
Happy to join the show.
Your entire all sports, all the time place to go. And you're here because everyone else that has anything to do with sports today is out handling sports things because the Royals are set to take them out, what, here, hour and a half, something like that?
Yeah, around 3:30-ish, yes, okay. Will be first pitch.
So what did you see yesterday that was good, and what do we need to do today to keep that going? Because 1-0 scared all of us, and I'm going to be honest, I know we had a show to do yesterday. We were sitting here watching that entire thing.
Yeah, it was one of those. It's one of those things that you watch the game, and you know they found a way to get it done. Yeah. 1-0 is still a win at the end of the day. The offense still there's some question marks around the offense and being able to produce multiple. Like if it's a 5-4 game, are the Royals the ones that are scoring the five, or is it the four? Because the offense has struggled over the last month of the season. Yesterday, Cole Reagans was great. The starting pitching has kind of been their MO. It's been the diamond that has carried them
right
the entire season. So they got Seth Lugo today on the mound, a lot better than Zach Eflin, who is the pitcher for the Orioles. That's where Royals fans can be excited, I think, about this matchup, is because we've got the better starter
yep.
on the mound today for them, for the Royals. Offensively, they're obviously going to have to score a little bit. Bobby being able to get the clutch hit, Vinny Pasquantino back in the lineup.
Thank goodness.
Shaking off some rust maybe yesterday. We'll see if he can...
Right.
You know, get back in the fold. But Salvi's got to step it up a little bit. I think you got, if you look outside of Bobby, who else needs to step it up? I think Michael Massey. Salvi has had a bit of a rough go of it. If he can have a couple good hits, MJ Melendez nearly cost them the game yesterday. Being able to hit and get the runs on the board, I think, is the number one concern. But the fact that you have the better pitcher on the mound, that
right.
can give you a little bit of confidence, I think, going into this one. And history's on the side of the Royals in this. Cody gave the stat today on the show. 7-1 teams that win the first game in these wild card series are in game two. So they almost are always sweeping. So
wow.
history's on the Royals side, at least potentially for this one.
Why do you think the tickets were only $16? It is no
I,
one
I don't
pay
know.
Attention in Baltimore. We could not believe how cheap it would have been, like a cost of a flight to get there and watch it. But the seats were nothing.
Yeah, the fact that a playoff game was only $16, and it wasn't like it was just standing room only or just you know GA tickets. Like you were able to get seats for $16. I was very surprised at that. For Camden Yards being a historical ballpark that it is, I don't know if Baltimore fans just aren't as excited about it. I have no idea.
Right. And Drew, you already said that Seth Lugo is better than the Orioles pitcher that they're bringing up today. But how do we feel about him compared to Cole Reagans?
Seth Lugo?
Yeah.
Reagans is the better one, but I think Lugo's had the year, he had the best year of his career essentially this season. So the innings count was one of the things that worried people a little bit going into the second half of the season, but he's answered the call for that. And I just feel like given that he's had a career season, he's playing in one of the biggest games of his career. He's had a 3 ERA, the way that he's played momentum leading up to this one, it
sure.
makes him the second best starter, and people should have confidence because the rotation has been so good for them, including Lugo.
So today, if we win, it's over and we move on.
Correct.
If we will not discuss the other possibility, but if that other possibility happens, it goes to the final game three.
Yes, on
and
Thursday.
If we move tomorrow. Forward, it's Yankees, and tell us how that impacts this entire town on Monday, because that's exciting.
Oh, yeah, so we're going to have the potential of the Chiefs playing on Monday night, a Royals game during the day, so Not to say that there's not much work that's going to get done.
A lot of productivity on Monday.
There's going to be a lot of people who are excited for a lot of things other than work on Monday.
On Monday, that is so
even more than normal.
Exciting. And so we'll just sit and watch with everybody else. You know, I can't do play-by-play, but we found some interesting ways to kind of keep people informed yesterday while the game was going on. We will do the same today. And then there's a watch party. You guys doing a watch party again today?
Yeah, we're going to be out at Jefferson's in Lenexa, the Lenexa location. We're going to be out there watching the game. It'll be everybody from the stage. Morning show, Bob, Dusty, Carrington will be out there. Alex and Cody are out there. I'll be out there. Rob's going to be out there. Everybody from the station will be out there. So come on and say, hey, if you're not doing anything.
Well, pace yourself, because at the end of the show today, maybe I'll come join you guys out of Jefferson. That's in my neck of the woods. Drew Nixon, a producer for Cody and Gold. I know you guys have a very, very busy day today, but let's go Royals. Let's get this done and move on down the road.
Now we can go ahead and beat the Yankees too after this, because nobody likes the Yankees.
Correct. Those tickets are probably going to be a little bit more expensive. Oh, last question. When would they theoretically come back to Kansas City and play?
It would be for game 3 and game 4 of that series against the Yankees. Timetable, not really sure,
right.
But if they do advance, we know that we would get baseball here in Kansas City, which is awesome.
All right, Drew Nixon, Cody and Gold's producer, you go do fun things at Jefferson's,
right,
and we will check in
me.
A little bit after the Royals game is over. Sam, it's going to be exciting. I'm kind of nervous today. I wasn't as nervous yesterday. I was more like, all right, they got to at least get through game 1 and then we'll see what happens. Today, I'm like, let's do this.
Let's get the deal done. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's get the deal done. All right, so I gave homework to some of our listeners last night.
Yeah.
I wanted people to go home and on Netflix watch the new documentary with Will Ferrell called Will and Harper, about Will's longtime friend and head writer for Saturday Night Live, who around age, if I had to guess, 65, Andrew was his name, came out as transgender and is now
Harper.
Harper.
Yeah.
And the trailer will make you cry. It will make you laugh. Will Ferrell is funnier than you even think he would be, quote, in real life. And they do a cross-country journey going back to her childhood home, going and doing some of the things that she enjoyed as her former self that she's not so sure she can now do today, like stock car racing. And, you know, I hate to say this, but all of the stereotypes in a small town where a woman walks into a bar and the jukebox stops. And she had Will Ferrell along with her for that journey. And coming up at 3 o'clock, we're going to talk about it. What people in that community think this is going to do. Will it help with some of the misinformation out there? And we'll take your questions on the text line in the 3 o'clock hour as well. Also coming up in this hour, we have new information. We'll be careful about how we talk about it, but new information about the death of the judge, allegedly at the hands of the sheriff's deputy down
south. Now former sheriff, yeah.
He finally resigned after
all of the rumors that were
allegedly
flying around.
Unloading his gun into a judge in the judge's chambers. There were a lot of rumors about that case. And Sam and I had said in the beginning, for him to walk into those judges' chambers and is alleged to have just rage killed this judge, there had to have been something going on.
And the rumors were confirming
A lot more information that came out since he was in court yesterday, and we're going to get to that straight ahead on Dana and Parks. 913-586-7798. You can text in. You can call in throughout the program today. Scott will be back on Monday. You are listening to Dana and Parks. Man, there are a couple of stories in the stack today that tick me off. And we're going to get to those first before the 3 o'clock hour. I call that the happy hour because all of Kansas City is shutting down to watch the Royals game.
Baseball in October.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Now, the text line is demanding that we not give score updates today.
Why?
Because they are recording the game
and would like
to go back and watch it later.
First
they were
of all,
not happy.
How do you, and I'm asking this honestly, how do you avoid
some people do
figuring out the score unless you lock your cell phone in a closet and don't look at it all day.
They go full hermit. They turn off all the notifications so that their Google doesn't say, hey, the Royals just scored, which I'm not saying the Royals just scored. The game hasn't even started yet. Simmer down.
Oh, my goodness.
And somehow they get away with not seeing anything about the game until they go home and watch the recording. So we will still do the sound effects and then not say what happened.
We'll talk about it as the day progresses. We will have a conversation about the appropriate way to not ignore the Royals game.
What we will talk about and what we will not ignore is signing up for cornhole. Tossing for Tails, the Dana and Parks Cornhole Tournament is coming back. We took a year off last year, but we are getting back at it this year. It's going to be on Saturday, October 19th from 10 to 2 at Serve, 91st and Metcalf.
Yep.
We're allowing 100 teams of two, $50 a team. Spots are filling up fast. You can go to KMBZ.com to sign up right now. And if you don't want to play but you want to watch, spectator passes are $10. You can buy those online, the same website. Or you can buy them at the door. All the benefits go to KC Pet Project. Tossing for Tails, $50 a team, teams of two. Coming up on October 19th, go
sign up. Let's get it done. Let's get it done. You're going to be there. I'm going to be there. Dan, Travis.
It's going to be a party.
I guarantee we can get Michael Mackey to come out. That's going to be super fun.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we're going to start in, I believe, Shawnee, although the defendant is from Prairie Village. Every once in a while, there is a court case that has me screaming and scratching my head, and this is certainly one of them. I need someone to explain to me how this trial yesterday ended in a hung jury, because nothing about that makes sense. And I want to remind you a little bit about this case. It was a murder trial for a man named Nicholas Ecker, who was accused of setting fire to his girlfriend's home. It was about a year ago, with their 17-month-old son inside. Pardon me, it was in 2022.
Yeah, back in 2022, that's right.
And of all the cases you could say to me that might end in a hung jury, this would not have even been in the top 10,000 that I could say to you, yeah, I can see where people would be hung up on this. And here's why. So we're going to talk about this, and then, my goodness, if you are on that jury, please call in. What was the tally at the end and why? So let's talk a little bit about the facts of the case. 31-year-old Nicholas Ecker was charged with first-degree murder and aggravated arson in the death of his 17-month-old son.
So his ex-girlfriend, the mother of his son, had reportedly been at home with the child, and he somehow found out, allegedly, that she was not at the house. And he got mad and went over to the house, drove from Prairie Village to the Shawnee home, and allegedly set it on fire. I mean, the house was on fire. Whether or not he did it is what's up for argument here.
Correct. He was also charged with, by the way, possession of a firearm by a felon, and we'll get to that in a moment. In a trial ending Tuesday, Johnson County jurors were unable to come to a unanimous decision on whether Ecker was guilty of setting the fire, guilty of the first-degree murder and the aggravated arson charge, okay? They did find him guilty on having a gun. They could agree on that, but not the setting of the fire and the murder, okay? The fatal fire took place around 1 a.m. February 13th, 2022, at the family home on 69th Terrace in Shawnee. Phelps left the toddler home alone, mom, most of the night, to visit a friend in Wyandotte. And we talked about that at length, whether she should be charged with child endangerment. She left. She left the house.
You don't leave a 17-month-old home at home alone, especially even if they're sleeping, but especially 17 months old.
I need you to all listen very carefully to the next sentence coming out of my mouth. Footage captured on a Ring doorbell camera showed Nicholas Ecker arriving at the house and setting it on fire. I'm going to read that again. Footage captured on a Ring camera belonging to the mom showed Ecker, the dad, arriving at the house and setting it on fire. An autopsy revealed that 17-month-old was alive when the fire started, Sam. Court records showed he suffered horrifying, horrifying injuries that led to his death. Others were inside the home during the fire, you might remember, but were able to escape.
I believe there it was two other children.
Please explain to me how there is video presented to this jury of Ecker setting the fire on Ring doorbell.
Now, to clarify, at the home. I don't believe the Ring doorbell footage caught him specifically setting the fire. The Ring doorbell footage caught him at the home 20 minutes after the fire was set.
I'm going to read the sentence again. Footage captured on a Ring camera showed Ecker arriving at the house and setting it on fire.
Okay.
20 minutes later, he showed up and went, hey, what's going on? Even though emergency responders had not yet contacted him. Investigators reviewed cell phone records from the phones belonging to both parties. And during his trial, there were text messages from dad questioning mom, where are you at before the fire, threatening to harm himself, and sending her photos he allegedly took inside of the house. Now, he's been in detention, and we have to figure out if they let him out. He's been in detention on a $1 million bond since all of this happened.
Now, the mom pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter and endangering the welfare of a child in August of 2022. She was initially sentenced to 19 years in prison. That was commuted
to probation.
She was given 3 years probation.
She was initially sentenced to 19 years, and a Johnson County judge gave her 3 years probation instead. Now, we know that these decisions have to be unanimous, okay? Whether or not the defendant is guilty of murder and arson has to be unanimous. If not, it's a hung jury. And so I'm asking you, was there one holdout, and was that person blind? Could they somehow not see the video? How does this happen that this is a hung jury?
Now, court documents say that he was caught on video setting the fire. Was there some question when they played the video in court of, was that him?
Well, that's
was he actually setting a fire?
That's what I'm asking.
Because if something tells me that this video didn't capture him with a flint and steel bent down, spark, 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 flame.
That's where we would need someone to call in, and what does that video show? We were not sitting in court when the video was presented.
And the court documents are...
It doesn't say a man purported to be or a man they thought was... It says, shows Ecker arriving and setting the house on fire.
Yeah.
He was, by the way, charged with domestic violence in two separate incidents, one occurring a week before the fire.
Am I wrong that court documents are filled out effectively by the prosecutor?
But I do not question what they say was presented in front of the jury here, Sam, but there has to be an explanation, and I don't know what that is. And I'm going to be honest, the fact that she was given probation for leaving in the middle of the night,
Mind-boggling by itself.
I don't understand that either. 913-586-7798. 913-586-7798. I'm wondering if this was a wonky case, Sam, where there was one holdout. One.
And I guarantee you it had to do with something being fuzzy in the Ring doorbell camera. Because if it showed him with a blowtorch,
I don't know.
This is hypothetical. If it showed him with a blowtorch and actually physically setting flames to the house, I don't know how this ended up in a hung jury.
913-586-7798. You are listening to Dana and Parks.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I found some more information, and it doesn't get into whether or not or to what extent the video shows Ecker starting that fire. But there is a heartbreaking moment that is in the affidavit about this case where, let's be honest, my God, neither mom or dad should be parenting children. We'll leave it at that. A newly released court document suggests that a jealous rage between a father and a mother led to the house fire that killed a Kansas infant. The papers contain portions of a heated exchange between the victim's father, Nicholas Ecker, who was the defendant that ended with the hung jury yesterday, and the mother, Carly Phelps. Ecker apparently did not realize, Dad, that mom had left their baby home alone.
Right.
So follow me here. Ecker is alleged to have set this fire
out of rage because
his ex is out mom doing was gone.
She's doing. Yeah.
But thought the baby was with mom.
Because logically, why would you leave a 17-month-old at home alone?
Correct. So listen to this. Firefighters pulled up just before 1 a.m. after multiple 911 calls about the fire. Home was already engulfed when they got there, and there were several points of that fire setting, by the way. This wasn't, oops, an accidental fire from a cigarette. There were several points in the home, according to arson investigators, where this fire was set, okay? At approximately 1:12 a.m., Dad arrived at the scene, though he had never been contacted by police. He allegedly stated that he came in the middle of the night, mind you, because, quote, he had a bad feeling. Mom arrived shortly after. During a police interview, she says, I was at a friend's house at the time of this fire. And they looked at her cell phone and all of that seemed to check out. Here is the horrifying moment where the two of these parents figured out that that baby was inside. At approximately 10:21 on the night of the fire, Dad wrote to mom, what's he doing? Where's he at with regards to their baby? Come see him when I get home, she replied. He's with me. So she lied. Dad is at the house or on the way to the house, and she has lied saying, I've got the baby. At approximately 11:33, Dad asks again, where's Junior? She responds again, with me, a lie. At 12:06, he sends a photo of the house and says, you ain't at your friend's house where you say you are. She insists she is. And then it just goes back and forth with expletives of them fighting, okay? Then the moment comes where the house is on fire.
Right.
And based on the messages, this says, he did not understand the baby was inside.
Which is why he returned 20 minutes
later.
That's
why he returned 20 minutes later. Yeah. Quote, I have a bad feeling. Okay. I swear to God, he wrote, something is not right. I know it. I can feel it. Something is terribly wrong. He says to the mom, please call me. Please call me. Something is wrong. I feel something isn't right. That exchange came after authorities say the fire had already been started. She replies, nothing is wrong. You're just pushing me over the top. It's all about you, isn't it?
Wow.
He replies at 1 a.m., where is Junior? Please tell me you have him. Something is wrong. She replies, nothing is wrong. He's sleeping in bed. I have the camera on him. She clearly didn't look at that camera because by then that house was on fire.
Right. That room was full of smoke.
He replies at 1 a.m., something is not right. And then she realizes what's going on, Sam. Go get Junior now. He is inside, you blank. I cannot believe you started that fire. You killed our baby, and you could have killed me. So that's in the affidavit. It says that there is video of Ecker, quote, starting the fire, and that ends in a hung jury this week.
Now, I'm surprised that the hung jury stuck around for the arson charge. Because if there is video of him setting the fire, it seems pretty clear.
But without the arson, there's no baby that has died.
I would agree, but that's not first-degree murder.
Man, I don't know.
You have to have intent to kill them.
They have to retry this. Anyway,
it's going to go back to court. They have a conference hearing or whatever it's called coming up soon.
We will keep our eye on that. 913-586-7798. Let's go to Kentucky now, Sam. We have been waiting for confirmed information in this case. What could have led this sheriff's deputy, who has since resigned in the last, 48 hours, to allegedly unload his gun inside of the judge's chambers.
Just an hour after they were at lunch together.
They had lunch,
everything a pleasant time.
Seemed fine.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the rumors that were out there. We had said from the beginning, this is rage. Whatever this is about, you know, and I said this out loud, thinking out loud, was somebody sleeping with someone's wife? Like right. Everything seemed fine. And then all of a sudden this happens. They're in court yesterday. There's video of this crime. There is video of what happened here.
And the footage backs the idea that this was an extreme passion behind the act. Now, obviously, that doesn't excuse it.
Okay, so here's...
But what went on that led up to it?
Here's what I can say that they mentioned in court. And then I want to ask you if it changes your opinion in this case.
Which, okay? By the way, in terms of the rumors, if you've seen them online, now the evidence goes all the way up to the doorstep of the rumors,
of the rumor.
But
correct.
Doesn't quite
correct.
Walk into it.
Correct. Okay, so we know right before those shots were fired, they exchanged cell phones. This is caught on tape. The entire thing is caught on camera because I'm assuming there's surveillance cameras in the judge's chambers.
Yes.
We know they exchanged cell phones. And at the time, we were like, what? What do you mean they exchanged? Like, you give me your phone and I'll give you my phone. Well, here we go. The shocking moment a Kentucky judge was allegedly murdered by his sheriff pal was revealed in court as testimony late yesterday offered some insight into that slaying. Surveillance footage of a man identified as Sheriff Sean Steins allegedly shooting District Judge Kevin Mullen several times in his chambers elicited emotional reactions from the courtroom as prosecutors played the video. The sheriff reportedly came out of the courtroom with his hands up after the shooting and asked police, quote, treat me fair. He added, they're trying to kidnap my wife and kid. Steins, the accused here, was decades-long friends with the judge. And as Sam said, even had lunch with him hours before this all went down. Okay?
And at one point during the lunch, they said, do we need to have a private meeting? But the context of that comment was not included.
Yep.
And it didn't seem angry, according to witnesses.
Surveillance footage from inside the chambers captures the sheriff using his and Mullen's phones to make multiple calls to the sheriff deputy's daughter just before he approaches the judge and shoots him dead. They have confirmed that police found the sheriff deputy's daughter's phone number saved in the judge's phone. And what I read, Sam, what happened was as they were, give me your cell phone. Like, play this out with me. Give me your cell phone. The judge
hands him the phone.
And somehow the dad either calls or texts somehow from, I don't know if it's her phone, and it rings on the judge's phone. You following
Correct.
Me here? And it pops up as a known, this is his daughter.
As a contact.
Now, authorities will not elaborate on the sex scandal in question. I don't even know why we would call that a sex scandal because I believe his daughter's underage. That is worth mentioning. I believe she is a minor. Capital M, minor. And that's the other case we're going to keep our eye on because I'm curious, Sam, if his defense, I almost guarantee you, is going to be heat of passion in a rage.
Because he found out.
He believed the judge had had some inappropriate contact with his minor daughter.
Now, the sheriff, days before, had been in court in a deposition for a lawsuit filed by two women, one of whom alleged that the deputy had forced her to have sex inside Mullen's chambers for 6 months in exchange for jail time.
He has pleaded not guilty. The issue with a case like that, let's say the court records show that the daughter's phone number is in that judge's cell phone.
Okay? That is clear and concise.
Yeah, that is clear and concise. Yeah. That, and I don't, we don't know if there's text exchanges. We don't know to what extent, but for him to unload that gun into that judge, let's just say he believed in that moment the judge had had illegal, I mean, that's rape if this child is a minor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, Steins is not involved in the other case where he was being deposed.
No.
Outside of the fact that he's the boss of the guy that's alleged of committing the crime.
But keep this about the daughter. Right. Okay. You are not allowed in the United States of America to be judge, juror, and executioner. And this was an execution style killing. However, you put this in front of a jury and it turns out that the sheriff's deputy was right. What is the conviction here? What is the charge? I'm not saying a juror would say there's no punishment here. But you get a dad on that jury with a teenage daughter or preteen, however old this girl child is. She is a minor. Does he walk because this is, what do you call this, Sam?
Heat of the moment?
Heat of the moment rage involving your child.
By the way, there was one detail that we got a little bit backwards. So he called his daughter from the judge's phone.
That's what it was.
Now, what was said when the phone was answered? Was the phone answered? Obviously, it was some sort of confirmation that it was his daughter.
Yes.
And then immediately after that, he opens fire. The judge drops to the floor.
You're saying the exchange of the cell phones was the daughter's phone?
No. It was the judge's phone. The daughter's phone was not involved.
Okay.
Outside of the fact that he called from the judge's phone.
And she answered.
Or it went to her voicemail. Whatever it was, it confirmed that it was his daughter.
913-586-7798. And is that a viable defense? You're not allowed to be, again, judge, jury, and in this case, executioner. And this was an execution style slaying.
From the text line, nothing will change my mind on a cold-blooded murder. Lock him up and throw away the key.
913-586-7798. We'll take your calls and your text straight ahead. You are listening to Dana and Parks. Welcome back to Dana and Parks. Scott will be back on Monday. Good luck to the Royals today. All we need is one more to keep on trucking. Game starts, what, in about 40 minutes, Sam?
It does.
We're going to do a great show, as normal. We're actually
going to be here. We
are going to be on the air. We're going to do the show.
That's right.
We might comment from time to time if exciting things are happening or bad things are.
We will do our best not to spoil it.
Yes. It's what we're going to do.
I said that for you and not me.
It's what we're going to do. Please stick around for the 3 o'clock hour. I told you all last night to go home and watch Will and Harper. Phenomenal documentary starring Will Ferrell and Will Ferrell's friend Harper as they take a cross-country journey together. I don't think they ended up in Kansas. They might have touched Missouri. I think they were in Oklahoma, they were in Illinois, and they started in New York. They just kind of crisscrossed back and forth.
Yeah.
It is funny. It is heartwarming. I believe it's going to win awards, and I do think it has the possibility to save lives. And we have a very special guest coming into the studio here in just a minute. I got to go down and get her, who's going to help lead the discussion about that documentary, Will and Harper. We will play you the trailer when we get back, except there's an F word in it, and it's really funny the way it's dropped, but I don't want to be fired. And so we will do that.
We're risking that again?
When we get back, and we will just go after that one part where that word is said. A New York City company has developed a simple swab test that can tell you how well or not well you are aging. Don't you know that? Don't you already know how well or not well
I feel
aging?
Like there's a pretty good tell by how you feel when the alarm goes off.
A biotech company headquartered in Manhattan has developed an aging clock that uses information from your cells to predict your biological age. The cells actually come from your cheeks. I think this is just a swab. Your age number from this swab can differ from your chronological birth age. Of course, the number of years you've been alive. Research has found in some people there is a large gap between your biological age and your chronological age that can significantly increase your risk of death from disease.
I love that, but where's the proof in the pudding? There is no pudding.
Well, because if you have made life decisions that are not conducive to living a long, healthy life. Let's say
you've been smoking and drinking for 40 years.
You drink, you do drugs, you are 200 pounds overweight.
Okay.
I think we all know people that like, man, she's 70, but she looks 85. Or the flip of that.
She's 80 and looks 55.
60, right? Yeah. We all know that. So I'm not sure what, like how much this would cost or what it would do.
Whatever it is, it sounds like a money ploy.
And sure enough, they found that a person's cheek age, that's what they call it, because it's a cheek swab, is associated with lifestyle factors. Alcohol consumption is one of them. Exercise is another. And here's the third one, and it's a big one. Sleep. How well do you sleep? I don't know. Would you do it? I would do it if it was free and somebody said, here, show me, take me some cheek cells, and we're going to tell you what your age really is. I would do it. And I feel like my age is like 5 years younger than I am.
Of course. I'm going to give you a very conspiratorial response and say, no, I'm not giving anybody my DNA to sell that data to somebody else.
Have you not done 23andMe?
No.
Oh, well, I did do that.
By the way, last month, all of the board members resigned at once. So something's going on there, too.
Maybe they all found out their real cheek age is 95.
Yeah, I'm certain that that's not what went on.
All right. The documentary is called Will and Harper, and we are going to talk about it straight ahead. We are going to take your questions on the text line. Load them up. 913-586-7798. We're going to try to play that trailer when we get back. The parts that don't include the F word. You're listening to Dana and Parks. Stick with us.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.